Because if you cannot count the elections fairly, inaccurately, then there's no way to tell whether the majority of the people, you know, the will of the people has in any way been honored. Even if somebody wins a large majority, it is possible for the umpire to take the victory away from the winner. And that's possibly endemic in much of the United States, because people want to have that insurance policy that their system is being held accountable. So if somebody wants to be a volunteer citizen auditor and they live in or around Broward County, send us an email at info@democracycounts.org and we'll sign you up. We really need somebody. We're doing training sessions on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Sign up for the Superhuman Brain Free Masterclass. 99% of the population is focused on treating the symptoms of brain-based diseases and disorders. Remarkably, the 1% focused on cultivating a healthy, high-performing brain often see symptoms disappear as a side effect of getting healthy and restoring function. The Superhuman Brain Masterclass will give you access to the upgrades you've been looking for: maximized memory, exceptional focus, and greatly productive brain function. When you join this free masterclass, you'll learn the Superhuman Brain proprietary methodology, a world-class education with simple checklists, step-by-step solutions, and little-known protocols that invite healing, brain upgrades, and next-level performance. The Superhuman Brain Masterclass is online and free from December 3rd through the 9th, 2018. Sign up with the link below.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. This episode, we're going to talk about voter fraud, and it's quite frankly an epidemic in our country. And I have a person coming on. His name is Daniel Wolf, who is trying to tackle voter fraud. We're going to talk about what's, you know, the various facets of it, how the courts play in. But he's also going to talk about this high-tech application that he created to audit various elections and create integrity in our system. And we talk about it, and I direct questions at him, like, how do we trust you? How do we trust that? Why do we need it? All these things. And it's a great conversation about voter fraud and how to take care of it and why it's such a problem here. And the interesting thing is they started in 2016, but that was their first time and the data wasn't good enough. But now they're doing another trial. Their goal is to have it completely running and functional all over the place in all the swing states by 2020 presidential election. But this election, they're focusing on Broward County and Deputy Wasserman Schultz election specifically, which will be very interesting because that election, she's always been a target of speculation of fraud. And so it'll be interesting what the results of that election, you know, is and how that all factors out. I for one, want to see what's going on. As people know, Broward County is known to be one of the most corrupt counties in our country. And it's really important. If we can bring integrity to that place of our country, we can bring it anywhere. So I'm really interested in how that works out. And he sticks around for my patrons as well. And we talk about voter suppression, how they're dealing with that with their application. And then he gives us some inside stuff on, you know, how they thought about some things and some intelligence agencies and how he can keep his, you know, integrity in his organization. I think you'll like this conversation. And the link to see that is below for my patrons. Let's get into my interview now with Daniel Wolf. Daniel, thank you so much for joining the show today.
Well, thank you for having me.
You are on a mission to eliminate fraud from our voting systems, which is a heroic thing to try to take care of. I want to talk first about what kind of fraud you have seen in our country and why it's even a problem to try to take on, because the establishment wants you to believe that we don't have fraud in our country. So what is it that you're seeing that is a major issue?
It is possible. I want to speak as somebody who's doing my darned best to be nonpartisan, completely impartial with respect to the data, the chips fall where they may, that sort of thing. So even though I do have my own personal opinions, about politics, I put them aside. I'm a political scientist and a lawyer, and I do my best to talk just about the facts as I know them, even if they sometimes, you know, kind of bother people that I support.
Well, don't you think, and I don't want to interrupt, but don't you think that for our country to be good, no matter what side of the aisle you're on or where you, even if you don't believe in sides of the aisle, that having a functioning republic and democracy, a democratic republic, you have to have fair elections?
Absolutely. If you don't have fairly counted elections, that's different from a fair election per se, because a fair election includes issues like access to the media, no intimidation of voters, you know, no assassinations, that sort of thing. But fairly counted is the absolute most fundamental thing, because if you cannot count the elections fairly and accurately, then there's no way to tell whether the majority of the people, you know, the will of the people has in any way been honored. So the problem in the United States is that our election systems have gotten to the point where it's impossible to tell whether elections are accurately counted. Software is often proprietary, so the machines cannot be properly evaluated. There's a lot of election suppression, or voter suppression, that sort of thing. So basically what we have is a situation where even if somebody wins a large majority, it is possible for the umpire to take the victory away from the winner. And that's possibly endemic in much of the United States.
Well, tell me why you think it's endemic. Have you seen actual situations and you can prove it?
Well, see, the problem is proof, and this is why we're doing what we're doing. Because, you know, when people commit fraud, they don't leave the evidence laying around. In the United States, we do not require elections to be audited in a disciplined, structured, strict way. If you're a casino operator in Las Vegas, Nevada law requires that every line of computer code be examined, and they're really good about that. If you run a credit card company or a bank, the regulators are very good at keeping you in line to make sure that you're going to be operating in a non-fraudulent way.
And paying taxes, but go ahead.
And paying taxes, and we don't apply that same standard to vote to counting of the vote. So wherever there's means, motive, and opportunity, you're likely to see a crime happen, unless a person who has the means, motive, and opportunity has an ethical standard that they won't violate. So what we have in the United States is there's lots of motive, because we're now talking about trillion-dollar elections. Elections where if you win the election, you know, your candidate can institute policies that are worth millions and billions of dollars to you. So the motive is there to do something to get your candidate in. The opportunity is there because our systems are very weak. And it's very possible with computerized election fraud, you know, machine fraud and so on, to hide your tracks. That's the means and the motive, and the opportunity is just, do you have access to the equipment? Do you have access, you know, either by hacking from the outside or because you are in some way connected with the party machine, you know, you can arrange things. So in Ohio, for instance, in 2004, the Democratic candidate for president was looking like he was a million votes ahead, and suddenly there was a computer crash in the Secretary of State's office, and in the following hours he ended up being 100,000 votes behind, and that gave the election to Bush. That kind of stuff is not proof of anything. Proof is very hard to get. Courts demand proof, you know, they demand solid, independent, direct evidence before you even can go into court and maintain standing in order to challenge an election. If the evidence is hidden, how can you offer it? What we're doing is setting up a way to gather evidence independently, direct evidence of what voters actually voted for, and then to say, look, here's a parallel system, Your Honor. In our parallel system, we have determined that the vote should have been in this neighborhood. And if it's not, if there's a discrepancy, we would like to have it investigated.
Well, I'm going to give you some proof. Well, first of all, this is more like an anecdotal thing. There was a little kid in Florida that could hack into the computer systems in less than 10 minutes. Right. If that isn't enough evidence that our stuff is vulnerable, then I don't know what else is. And then Laura Presley in Texas is actually all the way to the Supreme Court in Texas on where she has actual factual evidence of voter fraud. And I just got a call yesterday from Laura Presley and a group down there that are doing a lot of investigative work, and they found evidence of fraud in their primaries. And they are, you know, really doing the work. And it's like that everywhere. And that's what they believe. They're just trying to show evidence so that people can see that it's real, that this is really going on. And they want to show people, hey, this is going on everywhere. You know, so you got that little kid that could crack into the computer system in less than 10 minutes. And then you got Laura Presley and her gang proving that these numbers are being modified. But the thing is with Laura Presley, the system actively worked to suppress her.
Yeah. Let me distinguish something here. Evidence is not proof. And what courts require is a level of evidence that approaches proof. So what you've cited is absolutely true. There is evidence everywhere. But if you don't see, the problem is how to pressure the system in order to clean this up. It's not per se finding evidence. There's evidence everywhere, you know, but the breadcrumbs are, you know, courts don't pay a lot of attention to breadcrumbs. This is mostly anecdotal. Even when you offer statistical evidence, courts require that there be fairly compelling evidence for them to keep a case in court. And remember, well, you may not know this, the U.S. Constitution does not guarantee voting as a constitutional right. That's left up to the states. As a consequence, when plaintiffs go into court to challenge a system or an election, they are met with the problem that they don't have standing unless they can show sufficient injury to their plaintiff class and that it has some important public injury, you know, such that the public good demands that the case be heard.
Well, and shouldn't they also follow their own rules of engagement of what they communicated to their constituents that they were going to follow? And if they don't follow their own rules that they communicated to everybody, then that's fraud.
Right. Well, no, it's not necessarily fraud.
Can lie and say, I'm going to follow these rules and then not?
Right. But see, if there's so much slack in the rules and there's so many ways to game an election that's not sufficient to convince the court to take the time. And of course, judges are generally on the conservative side in terms of their willingness to mess with other government processes and other branches of government.
Well, but there, like in Laura Presley's case, where they got rid of the evidence that they could as soon as they could, even though she has, I think her evidence is, I mean, anybody who looks at it, it's pretty slam dunk. You know, there is evidence that gets so good that it's proof.
Yeah, it may be. I haven't seen her evidence, and she may very well have something that courts can take action on. Here's the problem in the American system. If politicians are elected officials are responsible for passing the laws that are the rules that govern the election systems. And so when we turn up lots and lots of evidence that indicates possible or probable fraud, then the logical thing to do is to either go to court or to pressure the officials. The problem with pressuring the officials is that they are dependent on the system that got them their job, and they don't want to necessarily change it much. And so lobbying as a strategy is not a very good strategy. On the other hand, going to court, you've got this higher bar to meet your burden of proof.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, so the she may very well be producing, Laura Presley may very well be producing something that will get her somewhere in court. And I hope she is. What most of the people in the election integrity movement are doing is producing enough to produce a good lobbying strategy, but that's kind of like asking the people who, you know, who depend on the fraud to get rid of it. It's not likely going to happen. And, you know, so.
Did you know that gluten is the one protein that humans cannot digest, and it's everywhere? Almost all restaurant foods, salad dressings, and so much more have gluten. To make matters worse, gluten is known to be one of the worst culprits for creating inflammation in the body. Chronic sustained inflammation causes joint pain, headaches, skin issues, digestive problems, weight gain, brain fog, and lowered immunity. The good news is there is an enzyme complex which specifically breaks down gluten, DDP4. Learn how to use this enzyme to eat the food that you want, protect yourself against inflammation, and become a healthier you. Click the link below.
Well, I understand that, but for them to say that we have to show a burden of proof how it hurts people, well, when most of your country doesn't trust your elections, I think there's some proof there that it's hurting our country. And so if they're so blind to that, then they are being willfully neglectful, and I would say that in itself is a crime.
Right.
Because when you undermine the confidence of our people and our election, that in itself is damage that's almost unrepairable.
That's very true. But see, the courts are not in charge of these larger political questions. The legislatures are, and the governors and the president and so on. So they don't have a role to play if you can't bring a specific case in conflict in front of them. So for instance,
broken system.
That's part of the breakage. So for instance, there have been a number of lawsuits challenging elections. And if you go in with, you know, say one person goes in with a case and says, you know, I was denied my right to vote, or I think the election was stolen and I'd like the court to look at it. The court's decisions are fairly uniform in saying, look, you don't have the right to vote under the U.S. Constitution. So you've got to show me a lot of people who have been injured by the loss of the right to vote to show that there's some kind of larger denial of due process or equal protection or something. Because, and I mean, you get the right to have your case heard in court if you are the victim of, say, racial bias. In that case, the court is required to apply a strict scrutiny standard, you know, because it's a suspect category. Sorry to be a lawyer, but this gets you standing even as one person, because one person in that case is entitled to rights under the Constitution.
Well, I gotta tell you, if they start doing this legalese crap and say you don't have and you can't really prove damage and all this other crap, and it looks like there's mass fraud, You are gonna have a pissed off community that is going to be like no other. I mean, we're sitting on that, teetering on the edge of, and maybe that's what they want.
Well,
I mean, if they don't get their act together, I mean, I just feel like we don't have leadership at all. Nobody's standing up and saying this. I mean, you are. You're standing up and saying enough is enough. We need to have something that we can trust.
Right.
But how do we know we can trust you? I mean, okay.
Okay.
I don't mean to be direct, but you know.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, we're setting ourselves up. Democracy Counts. It's a nonprofit tech startup, and we're setting ourselves up to maintain CPA level quality audits, and that means that we're utterly transparent and verifiable. So, I ran a public company for a couple of years. The public companies in the United States have to be audited by SEC audit. There's an agency called the PCAOB that audits auditors, and it's a very high standard. And so we require public companies to be audited quarterly, and I got used to that. And so I kind of have this picture in my mind of what it takes to do a really solid audit. So we've got people who have CPA audit experience.
Although, let me throw this at you, we know that Wall Street has gamed that system.
And oh, yeah.
If you are, I mean, it's a joke. You know, if you're a small company, oh, you are following it.
Right.
But if
Sure.
you're, so it's a whole sham. So how can people, how are they trusting you? Other than, can they all, is it all transparent so they can see what you're doing?
Right. So we run our audit system on mobile devices. And unlike private voting companies like ESS and Diebold, these kinds of companies, we will make our code that runs our system completely transparent to the courts. Eventually, it'll be open source and it'll be completely transparent to everybody. But right now, you know, if we go into court on an election, we'll basically lay the code out in front of the court and have the court's experts evaluate it. And third parties, independent evaluation, and so on. And we also, all of our human systems, are clearly documented. All of the people who work as auditors or even the voters that participate in the audit, they'll all be available to testify in court. So basically, we are laying ourselves out in the most transparent way possible. We're doing our best to maintain what you might call high audit standards on ourselves. So, you've got to audit the auditor. So we're going into this as honestly as we possibly can. We have Republicans and Democrats and Greens and Purples and all sorts of people of different political coloration in our organization. And they all believe fundamentally in honoring the will of the people. And in order to do that, it needs a very strict standard of compliance with letting the chips fall where they may. That means respecting the data wherever it goes. And so that's the standard we're applying to ourselves, so that when we come into court, if we're called into court, we would never go into court ourselves on our own behalf. What we will do is hand our data over to candidates, civic organizations, anybody who wants it can use it. And they would go into court and they'd probably call us in as expert witnesses, something like that. And then we would basically say, Your Honor, this is the way we gathered our data. This is what the data shows. We can't say for sure that it's fraud. We're not making that accusation directly. But if the discrepancies cannot be explained by the government or by the vendor, then it needs to be investigated by law enforcement.
Well, it's more than likely, if it's not fraud, it's a computer glitch or something else. Maybe it's not intentional, but there's a problem.
Yes,
here.
Exactly. So if there's a discrepancy, what we expect is that plaintiffs, using our evidence, would ask judges in an injunction hearing for an injunction against certification of the election pending a full investigation by forensic analysts, by law enforcement. And what's really interesting here, and this is a major part of our strategy, is that if a judge orders law enforcement to investigate, then it would mean in most cases that the attorney general would assign professional investigators who are professional before they are political to dig in. And because the state owns the computers, they own the ballots, they own the emails, they own everything, they don't need discovery orders or subpoenas. They can just go in and seize what they need from the state agencies, from the election agencies, because it belongs to them. We can't do that as private citizens. We need discovery orders, we need subpoenas and so on. And it takes a fight to get that. And that's where you get back to this problem of courts saying, I'm not going to give you a discovery order unless you can show me why you should even be here in court. So there's a very high evidentiary standard just to stay in court to get orders. Now, in 2005, when a lawsuit in federal court required that Ohio counties turn over their election information, when they were finally required to do so, it was discovered that most of the counties had destroyed all of it.
Yeah, why did they do that? Yeah, see, now, so when they do that, there's...
All kinds of excuses.
The cover-up's more of a crime than the crime in the first place,
exactly.
A lot of times.
Exactly.
Anytime they destroy it, that's fire. And the next time, there should be laws that say if you destroy it before we have a thing to be done, mm-hmm. then from now on, we get to, from now on, you have to keep it here and we get to audit it every year because you just hosed yourself
right.
over.
Right.
There has to be strict stuff like that.
But how do you get it? You get it because legislatures pass
care. Because they care and then they enforce it. They don't
right.
enforce it. Because they're afraid to enforce it because they're part of the problem.
Right.
They have to enforce it.
So what we come back to is, how do you develop a strategy? You know, what strategy will get you there? Our strategy is involves kind of pulling the trigger. We've got a certain kind of burden of proof in court at the injunction level, which is relatively low compared to the regular lawsuits. And if we can meet that minimum level of proof with our data, then the court can pull a very heavy trigger that we can't pull to require investigation. Once that investigation starts, and once the political fallout begins, then suddenly the defenders of the status quo are knocked back on their heels, because the proof is there in a very solid, undeniable way, because law enforcement is providing the proof.
Well, are people even listening? Are people even listening to you? How far are you getting? Because there's an incentive to keep it fixed, to rig it, to keep rigging it, because they're in control. We don't care what the people think. We're going to rig it and control it to our whims. We know how to rig it. We feel comfortable. We're in control. We'll lose control if someone like you gets in their position. So how's it working?
Here's what makes this whole thing fun. Okay, this is the devilish part of me coming out, right? We're doing this in a way that officials can't prevent us from doing. We're operating under the protection of the First Amendment. This is not every country has a First Amendment, right? But we're lucky that we do still,
and yes.
We're lucky that we still have an independent judiciary, which may not be so independent, you know, if things keep going the way they're going. So right now we've got a window for using the power of our independent judiciary to open political space, and to create the kind of drama that's required for people to wake up to what's going on with their vote, with their elections. Now, we can't say how that's going to come out, but we can provoke it. We have the right as citizens to provoke it. We, as Democracy Counts, a company, has the right under our laws to produce this evidence. And then we throw it out to the people, we throw it out to the court system, and then political chaos may break out. We don't know.
But how are you going to be creating this evidence? How do you get access to enough to be able to create the evidence that you're looking to create?
Well, we have different apps that we're using with the mobile devices, with volunteer citizen auditors. So citizen auditors go to polling places. There are several things we're doing. One is what's called a parallel vote. So people go in to vote, they come out afterwards, and they vote again on our system. And our system is rigorously constructed, so and transparent, unlike many of the public and private election systems, so that if for instance, let's say that 100 people voted for candidate X, and they come out and they vote on our system, and they say, okay, 100 people voted for candidate X. We are very confident that 100 people really did vote for candidate X.
How?
But it's official. Pardon?
How can you be confident that they're messing with it, that they went in and actually voted for candidate X?
Well, there's a gap there. There's a truth gap there, right? We don't know. Because we're not tied into the official system. So we're relying on voters to say that they voted fairly. But we get their personal information, and they sign an affidavit on our system that says, I voted the same way indoors as I'm voting here.
Okay. There's people who want the system to be legit.
Yeah,
so
exactly,
they're going to be,
exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And if a judge wants to question some of them at random, we have their personal information. We can call them and bring them into court, and the judge can evaluate their truthfulness. That's done all the time. It's very straightforward. And so they vote again, or they actually give us their personal information, and they sign this affidavit. Then they close that app, and another app is opened that where they can vote, and they have a secret ballot. So on the one hand, we have their personal attestation, of truthfulness, and on the other hand, we have the package of votes, and so those votes, if there's 100 people from that precinct that said they voted for X, the probability is very high that 100 people voted for X. Now, if the official results say that 95 people voted for X, where'd those 5 votes go? Now, if it said 100, if say they said 110 people voted for X, that's fine, because we don't expect 100% participation. But it ought to be at least at the same level as our benchmark.
Now, are you seeing more people that are Democrat or Republican or Green Party using your app? Or, I mean, are you getting a good equal representation?
Well, we're still in the trial stage, okay? This is version 1.0. We ran a pilot in June 2016 in the California primary, and so we know the system works.
Did you find fraud?
No, because our data wasn't good enough. You know, okay. We were having technical problems. Again, we were trialing the system. We were piloting it. But what we found was very interesting, that particular feature of our system, the parallel vote system, requires that we get very high percentages of participation in order to have the sensitivity of the instrument to be able to show discrepancies. And exit pollsters said, you're never going to get that level of participation. We only get 30 to 50% when we try to do this. And well, we tried it and we got well into the 90 percentiles with no previous voter education or signage or anything, because people want to have that insurance policy that their system is being held accountable. And so now, at well over 90%, you know that most Republicans and most Democrats and most independents are participating. Everybody feels the same way in this respect.
It's a pretty nonpartisan issue.
It is. You know, we've got another feature of our system we call a data preservation app. And what that does is basically we send out, this is very manpower, you know, conserving. We send somebody out to every polling place and they take a picture of the polling place tally that's posted on the door. This is done in most states. And then they digitally enter the races that we're following. We were just following the top of the ballot races, governor, senator, president, congressman, that sort of thing. And then we freeze that. And that's encoded, it's encrypted and protected. And so now the state can't lose that piece of paper because we've got it. And then we compare it to the eventual precinct results that are published on the Secretary of State website. And if they don't match, bye-bye man in the middle. There's no possibility of a man in the middle attack with this part of the system. It goes away. That's 50%.
How often do you see that as a error?
We don't know, but it's very probable that's what happened in Ohio in 2004. Man in the middle attacks are very easy to do and to conceal. And so we just want to take it completely out of the picture. It's gone.
Poof. That's great. Okay, so where are you right now? I mean, where with this election, midterm election, what kind of involvement are you looking for, and what are you trying to have happen this time?
Well, right now, I'm sitting in a friend's house in Miramar, Florida, which is very near Hollywood and Fort Lauderdale. This is the 23rd congressional district of Florida. It's a race between the principal candidates. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the former president or chair of the Democratic National Committee, and Tim Canova, who's a law professor. He actually invited us in to do an audit of this race. We're not doing as large a scale audit as what we would have liked to have done, but we're doing our best because it's still early in our system and so on. So if we...
Not to interrupt, but I'm going to, because that is an important race to audit.
It's just one Congress race, but on the
I
other
know,
hand,
but I
on the other hand,
that yeah. one has been yeah, her been, elections have been very questioned. So I'm glad you're pointing at that one. Go ahead.
This is where we are. This is, like I said, this is version 1.0. We have a number of auditors, volunteer auditors signed up. We had 90 signed up, but so far we have many fewer than that confirmed at this point. So if somebody wants to be a volunteer citizen auditor and they live in or around Broward County, please go to, send us an email at info@democracycounts.org and we'll sign you up. We really need somebody. We're doing training sessions on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Is this the only one that you're doing?
This is the only one we're doing right now.
This is your trial. So is your goal to have the 2018 election fully rolled out?
Our goal. Our goal is to come out of this election with enough with enough skill and experience and let's say, since we're a nonprofit, this isn't exactly, you know, marketing, but with enough kind of brand presence, as it were, to be able to go into states anywhere in the United States and work with local people to set up their audits for themselves. So we want to facilitate audits in all of the swing states in the United States in 2020 to make sure that the states that throw the Electoral College one way or the other, that those states are, you know, completely copacetic and spick and span clean. Now, are we going to be able to do that? I don't know. We're not going to keep the elections clean, but we may be able to deter fraud. And if we detect fraud, then it could be a repeat of the 2000 election, you know, where suddenly who won the presidency, because there's a contest, right? And so our goal is to be there so that the American people know that whoever won the vote, you know, is the actual declared winner, that it is not an illegitimately declared winner.
Well, so what do you need now? You need people to volunteer for the Broward County election judge,
right?
Auditor, election, I don't know what you're calling it, auditor, you just said. What else, how do they get hold of you, and do you need anything else?
Well, they can go to democracycounts.org. That's our website. We would love to have donations, you know, because this is an expensive process, and based, frankly, we're running on fumes. I'm counting every dollar while we do this. Right now, for this week, what we need most of all is volunteers in Broward County. But if you're not in Broward County and can somehow would like to support the people who are in Broward County, then please make a donation at democracycounts.org. Now, there's one other possibility, because our software is set up as what's called a software as a service, a SaaS. And so the way it will eventually work, right now it has to be kind of manually configured for each place. But for instance, if somebody in Georgia wanted to do an audit right now, we could do basically a copy and paste of our code and set it up so they could do an audit in Georgia. Now they could, in Georgia is especially in the news because of voter suppression. One of our features is a voter suppression app that allows the people using it to quantify the amount of voter suppression in a way that courts have to recognize. It's not the whole thing, remember, is to take speculation out of the picture and to substitute real, honest data and evidence.
What would you say is voter suppression?
Voter suppression is well, there's a lot of ways of doing voter suppression. I mean, voter suppression has been there since elections came about. Voter suppression in the 1900s was walls of goons around the ballot boxes, right? You know, so now it's got a lot of different forms. The popular form right now of voter suppression is excessive voter ID. So voter ID is good. We all want everybody to go to the poll and prove that they are who they say they are, so that the only person allowed to vote under the name of Daniel Wolf is Daniel Wolf, right? But if somebody else gets in there, they're denied the ability to do that. That's voter ID at its essential. That preserves the franchise because it preserves the right of the individual voter. But if you put layers of stuff on top so that it ends up destroying the franchise, it ends up preventing people from voting who otherwise have the right to vote, that becomes voter suppression under color of law. And so we're drawing a distinction between requiring voters to identify themselves and requiring voters to pile things on that keep them from voting,
making it really difficult for certain segments not to vote. Now, what about illegal immigrants? Because there's been a upsurge, according to the narrative, that there's a lot of illegal immigrants that are voting. And, you know, and then there's some districts where there's more votes than the people who even live in the district.
Okay, all of those tricks have been there forever. You know, so let's say this is not a new thing. Now, let me draw another distinction, and I hope this doesn't try your patience. We distinguish between voter fraud and election fraud in the following way. Voter fraud is where an individual voter, on his own instigation, goes to the polls and tries to vote a second or a third time, right? And it, when they do that, what they're doing, and it does happen, surely, but the Pew Foundation says that it doesn't happen very much because they've done a lot of research. There are only so many investigations and so on. Those kinds of instances require that somebody take the risk of being prosecuted for a felony in return for having an infinitesimally small arithmetical difference on the election outcome. So people who, if I want to go and vote a second time, I'm taking an awful big risk for a very small benefit. But now, if you are running a political machine, say in Chicago, and you want to vote some dead people's names,
exactly,
all you have to do is hire some people to go out and commit voter fraud, except it's really not, the voters are participating. There are voters doing this, so it's voter fraud in that sense. But it's not voter fraud in the sense that it's organized. You know, it's politicians doing the dirty work of hiring people, you know, and they're making sure that they're not going to be prosecuted. And these particular voters are getting a benefit of maybe $50 or $100 or something, but the politicians are getting the benefit of getting elected.
All right, is there any way to get to the bottom of that? Because that's pretty shitty.
Well, this is interesting because, see, this is where our parallel voting system comes in, for instance. If somebody goes in and votes and comes out and votes again in our system and they give ID, then, because we're going to look at their driver's license, you know, and they're going to put their information in. And so they're having to qualify a second time. So if we find somebody in the system that shouldn't be in the system, you know, then you have a question.
You'll be cleaning that up.
You might be able to turn some of this stuff up. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, our job isn't to do law enforcement, but on the other hand, our data, because it'd be completely open, is going to reveal things that shouldn't be happening, whether it's by officials or by individuals.
No, keep going if you have more to add.
Some of the voter fraud that I've heard about in Florida, there was a recent case I saw it, it was publicized by a conservative voting rights group there's some people, half a dozen people are being prosecuted for voter fraud. Well, it's very interesting because the article notes that these people are being prosecuted for voter fraud, but they were hired by unnamed politicians to do it, and they're not releasing the names of the politicians. Isn't that interesting? So is this voter fraud or is this organized election fraud? Well, I would argue that it's organized election fraud using voters to do the dirty work.
Unless they actually have really good evidence and the politicians are afraid of some kind of retribution that puts their life at risk.
Who knows?
You know what I mean? It gets pretty dirty out there from what
people die in my business, okay?
People die in your business, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So that's why people need to realize what you're doing and what this is heroic. Now, it's important, though, that your stuff stays clean and that it ends up transitioning into a very transparent kind of scenario, because it's the only way. Transparency is the only way to make sure that this is legit, you know.
Let me say that hopefully by 2019, our platform will be complete. I mean, our platform is substantially complete now, but the way our platform works is that if somebody somewhere, they could be in Wyoming, you know, I mean, I don't know if there's any fraud in Wyoming because it's a small state with, you know, a very small red state. And so where's the controversy, right? There's only going to be fraud where there's controversy, where there's close races, but maybe it happens. But so maybe a community organization, let me say this. Anybody who can organize a birthday party can organize an audit of their local polling place using our system. So it's a very low standard for abilities in that respect. And so what you do is you sign up for an account on our platform. It's not there yet, so don't go do it just yet. But you sign up for an account on our platform. You go into it. You get your password stuff, all the usual stuff. And then you start organizing within the platform. So you bring your friends and you connect and you form a group. And now the group can communicate, and it can also communicate with other groups because you may be doing it together. And then you watch videos, you take training, you pass some tests. It's not rigorous, but you've got to know that there are some certain things that you've got to do in order to get quality data. And the if you don't get quality data, there's no point in doing it. So you've got to get these minimum standards of auditing skills in order to be able to do it right. Once you have kind of gotten through that screen, then you're given, you know, the right to access the software. But, you know, and so you can use it for trial term basis, you know, like run little pilots, that sort of thing. But then on election day, the software opens up to you. And so you go to your polling place, you do your auditing. It's two-factor sign-in. There's always going to be a case where you've got your own sign-in and then the team leader signs you in as well. And then it's geolocated so that if, as long as you're at the polling place and, you know, and you're around your other team members, fine, you can keep entering data. But if you wander 150, 200 feet away, the software turns you off and you've got to come back in and sign on again. So you can't create data somewhere else. And then there's all the cybersecurity and the encryption and so on, that all of that's involved. And then we run the back end. We just run the data collection. So you set it up on the front end for yourself. We run the data collection on the back and we just provide it to you as data, which you can then give to candidates, civic organizations, the government, whatever you want to do. So this is an independent check that anybody in the United States, or let's say actually anybody in this English speaking world, as soon as we get this going, will be able to use this in their elections. Eventually, we hope to be able to provide it in different languages for different systems like parliamentary systems and so on.
Well, you said that if somebody wants to do this in their local election or like Georgia, where you're seeing some evidence of, you know, voter suppression, they could do it for this election. Is that true?
They could do it for this election. Yeah, they could do it. They would have to get in touch with us really fast because okay. We would have some work to do to make the system work for them.
Okay, so they need to, when is their deadline to reach you?
You know, if somebody... today is Thursday.
This will be up by tomorrow.
Yeah, they would. Well, we've got programmers that would have to go on overtime, you know, to make this happen.
If they reach you by Saturday, the weekend.
If they reach me by Saturday, then we could probably turn it around for them.
Okay, and in the meantime, they can.
That gives me like whoa.
and how about I can imagine. Now, how about signing up as an election auditor for Broward County? When is that cutoff?
Please contact us by Saturday because our last training session is going to be on Sunday.
Okay, and then as far as donations, you'll take donations after the election. So, okay, give us your website again and how they can reach you.
It's Democracy Counts, you know, two words smushed together, democracycounts.org. There's a donation page. There's lots of information on there about how our system works. I mean, I'm a too much information kind of guy, and it's all there. People tell me to not say so much. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Go to the website. You're probably going to get your questions answered.
Now, are you going to officially publish the results of Broward County one way or the other?
We will make our data available one way or the other. Whether it shows anything is a totally different question, because we may deter fraud. The audit is very small. You know, catching election fraud is like playing whack-a-mole, you know, boom, boom, boom.
Yep.
They may be able to keep the polling place that we look at. They may be able to, I don't know how many polling places we're going to be able to look at. It depends on our number of volunteers. It takes approximately 10 volunteers to do a polling place. So if we have 30 volunteers, that's three polling places. But we're also running the data preservation system, so I want about 10 people for that. So now we're back to two. So it's very easy for them, you know, if
how many volunteers do you want?
I would like to have 200 volunteers.
Okay, so your goal is that, and you're sitting at how many right now?
Well, we're sitting at 92 nominal, but in fact, we've only got about 20 confirmed.
Okay, so we need to get our act together. People from Broward County need to contact you, and they need to do it ASAP. Okay, well, thank you so much. Will you stick around for my Patreons?
Sure. Thanks very much.